Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Go Force. I'm your host, Paul Gant, alongside Jeremy Esmond. And for the next hour, we will be talking sports and having fun doing it. I want all your ideas, all your opinions, and all your beliefs. And of course, you will have the other dose of our opinion. If you have an opinion, the number to call, 646-727-3070. That's 646-727-3070. You can listen to the show at blogtalkradio.com/pgan, that's blogtalkradio.com/pgan, and you can send email messages to the show at goforward.gan@gmail.com. That's goforward.gan@gmail.com. Expected to be joined by 11-time Pro Bowl offensive tackle Willie Rowe, who's been joining us throughout this football season. And, of course, we're going to talk football with Willie Rowe, and that should be a lot of fun. And look forward to that, as always, when Willie Rowe stops on by. But I want to start with baseball real quick, and I want to start with Cliff Lee. Cliff Lee signed with the Philadelphia Phillies, 5 years, $120 million, lots of money. But he turned down a lot more money to go to the Yankees and to play for the Rangers. Could have had a $160 million deal with the Yankees. So essentially he left $30 million behind. So he left $30 million on the table. Must be nice and must be beautiful. But he left that a lot of money on the table to come back to Philadelphia, a place he loved, a place he enjoyed, and a place where essentially he wanted to be. He definitely wanted to be there. But again, that's a lot of money to turn down. And more power to him, I guess. But anyway, he joins his Philadelphia rotation now with Holiday, Oswalt, and Hamels. I mean, and you're talking about a dynamic duo, not a duo, but a dynamic foursome there. I mean, every single night, you're going to go up against a formidable starter. You're going up against a formidable starter. And it could be a situation where Roy Oswalt or Cole Hamels is your number four starter. I mean, goodness gracious. So Philadelphia definitely did their thing there with that sign.
You know, you're obviously it's pretty obvious that you still have some issues, you know, with me. I don't even get the hello, Jeremy, how are you? The obligatory, and then you're making fun of Cliff Lee because he's leaving money on the table. It's obvious that again, maybe over the weekend, not enough was put in a certain envelope. That we have to start off the show that way, followed by the precedent of money. Because if I'm you, I'm going to ask myself, if you're Cliff Lee and you really don't want to go to a team, it was obvious he didn't want to go to the Yankees. And he wasn't going to get the money in Texas, nor did he really want to be in Texas. And the Phillies come in, you know, smiley out of nowhere, and they gave him a very fair deal. It's a very fair deal. It's less money than the Yankees, yes, but he didn't want to go there. And does it? You're saying $20 million, Paul, but at some point, don't you want $30 million? But don't you want a player to say, you know what, $30 million? I'm signing a contract for $120+ million. What's another $30 million? I'm an athlete. I throw a ball. Is it really worth $150 million?
$30 million is $30 million. You'll never see $30 million in your lifetime, and more than likely, I won't see $30 million in my lifetime. So what is $30 million?
So you're so positive. I won't see $30 million in my lifetime, but you're not so positive. You won't. First of all, more than likely you won't, but I definitely won't.
You won't see it, and a lot of people won't see it.
But maybe you will.
Maybe not. Maybe, maybe not. I mean, I'm not really interested in that type of money, but if it happens, it happens. But at the same time,
so you would, Paul, but you would go. But let me ask you something, Paul. So you're going against your belief system for $30 million.
Well, let me say something for a second. I guess I really would turn $30 million to live in that godforsaken city they call New York. So yeah, you're right. Maybe I would leave $30 million at the door instead of living in that godforsaken city they call New York. I would not live in New York for $30 million, and you can keep the $30 million that the Yankees were offering this man. So, yeah, maybe I would have turned it down as well. Maybe
that's funny, Paul.
Well.
That's funny because I'm sure we're getting a few callers from that area, and I know that you know you were all too happy that the fraud that you were. You even developed the accent. You were there for so long. You became you had the New York dialect.
Well, it was 2 years in New York City.
But those 2 long years changed your dialect.
2 years of hell on earth, and. Thank God I'm out of that city, that godforsaken city. But there were also, and there was a situation where apparently there were some talks and some rumors that possibly Cliff Lee's wife was spit on at a Yankees Rangers game by a Yankees fan, and that had something to do with it, or you know, or somebody poured a drink on her, or something of that nature, and that had something to do with it. But Cliff Lee said that did not have anything to do with it. And you got the sense with this guy that he really enjoyed his time in Philadelphia. The fans really enjoyed him. And he wanted to come back to Philadelphia, and he never wanted to leave Philadelphia. And then that was the reality of it. He never wanted to leave Philadelphia. He left it, but not because it was his choice. He left Philadelphia, and he didn't want to leave Philadelphia. But he left. He left it. But the thing was, you knew, that guy did not want to leave Philadelphia. And rightfully so. I mean, you look at this Phillies team. This is a team that could be contending for a very, very long time. This is the golden era of the Philadelphia Phillies. And right now, with the signing of Cliff Lee, you have four formidable starters. You do lose Jason Worth. But again, you bring Cliff Lee in. And hopefully, I mean, you're not going to have to, and when you look at
the fact that they get Cliff Lee for basically the same price tag they would have essentially had to match for a guy like Jason Worth, and I mean, I think it's a no brainer. I think there's really no one out there that says to themselves that you're going to say that there's a higher upside to Jason Worth than there is Cliff Lee, and that's where I say. All the stats show, this reminds, you mentioned too, the Braves teams of the mid-90s, and probably better. I mean, people forget too, they still have a very good closer in Lynch, if, you know.
An okay closer. I mean,
very good in comparison to what's out there on the open. Who else are they going to get, Paul?
Well, I'm just in terms of they just still do need some bullpen help.
But you have two starters. Two of the four, Paul, are known to go well into the seventh inning, and they pitch a lot of innings and they throw a lot of strikes. So
well,
I mean, they don't.
You definitely have a lot of innings eaters right now with the guys that you have on your staff, and. I mean, don't get me wrong. I would love to have had Jason Worth back. But, I mean, I guess I'll take this trade-off. I'll be okay with this trade-off, but I would love to have Jason Worth still in the mix. But at the same time, when you have an opportunity to get the type of pitching that you have now, I mean, it's a no-brainer. You have to make that decision. You have to make that choice. And right now, the Phillies, if you look at them, it's looking really good. It's looking really good, and Charlie Manuel and those boys have no choice but to get back to the World Series. They have no choice, and I don't know what your excuse can be at this point. And so I expect them to get back to the World Series, and if you're Charlie Manuel, that's what needs to happen, and it has to happen. Otherwise, this is an unsuccessful season coming up. It's a lot of pressure, but this is a team that I think responds well to pressure. And a team now that nigga's prepared to really do some big things and possibly win their second World Series in the last 4 years. And definitely a shock and a surprise because no one expected it. It came out of nowhere, but they got it done. It makes you wonder, why couldn't they have just kept Cliff Lee last year and tried to go at it with Cliff Lee last year? But, I mean, they made the decision that they made. But, I mean, you wonder, wow, maybe they could have just kept Cliff Lee last year and re-signed him like they did with this whole situation here. But, I mean, again, they didn't. They lost it in the NLCS, and now they have an opportunity with Cliff Lee to get back to the World Series and ultimately do some big, big, big things. So we want to get your thoughts on the Cliff Lee situation, the Cliff Lee deal. What do you think about it? How do the Phillies stack up now with Cliff Lee in the fold? So we'll get your want to get your opinions on that. And also, big game, big football game coming up this weekend. Eagles, Giants, rematch of these two NFC rivals. Last time around, the Eagles got it done. But this time around, this is for all the marbles at this point. This is pretty much for all the marbles right now. You know, and if you look at it, right now the Eagles are 9-4, and the Giants are also 9-4. And if the Eagles can win this football game here, they essentially wrap up the division. Essentially, you now have a two-game lead with two games to play. So if they can win this, more than likely, the Eagles win the division. Now, if the Giants win it, you look at their remaining schedule, they have a tough one. I mean, at Green Bay, but that you got to look at that and wonder if Aaron Rodgers will be in the mix. But if Aaron Rodgers is in the mix, that's a tough game. And even without Aaron Rodgers, you're still going to Lambeau. That's a tough game. But if the Giants, basically what it comes down to, I think whoever gets it done will probably win the NFC East. Not probably. I think they will win the NFC East. Whoever wins this week will win the NFC East, in my opinion. And it's going to be a big football game. And last time around, the Giants were a team that if you looked at it, they did a fairly decent job on Michael Vick. They did a fairly decent job. But even with that being said, the Eagles left a lot of points on that field in that football game. A lot of opportunities. You had a couple drops in that game. You had a one that comes to mind, Avant, who just dropped a short touchdown in the end zone. And, you know, so they left some points on the board there in that game. And they let the Giants hang around and let the Giants hang around. And ultimately, the Giants made a comeback. And ultimately, the Giants, they would lose, but they made a comeback. But the Eagles took it over, and the Eagles did what they had to do and won the football game 27-17. But if I look back at that game, and I'm saying to myself, it was a tough game. Everyone's talking about how well the Giants did against Michael Vick. He did manage to still throw for 258 yards. But the Eagles, they talked about how well they did against this guy. And they did okay. They did well against the guy. But even with all that being said, there were opportunities that the Eagles had in that football game they could have really put the game away and possibly blew it out.
I hate to sound like a Vic basher, but I told you, Paul, I see the one tendency with him still is, and it's been a knock on him his entire NFL career, which is if you get to Michael Vick, you can really alter his decision-making. And I think I can honestly tell you the one thing, and we certainly are talking about the opportunities that were left, you know, on the board, and I don't disagree, but another key issue that I saw wrong with that game was the blatant disregard that the total NFL, the NFL administration has for Michael Vick, the athlete. Forget about Michael Vick, the person. No other quarterback would have ever not gotten the call. It was a late hit, and it could have, again, there could have been an injury on that play, and I'm going to tell you right now, it's obvious that the officials and some of the, you know, the parties that be, they don't mind seeing Michael Vick taking those late hits because of Michael Vick the person, and that's to me totally inexcusable because he, when he steps on the field, becomes Michael Vick the athlete, and the NFL this year of all years, who's not just protecting quarterbacks but player safety, it was unquestionably a late hit, and there's not even a penalty.
So you're saying that the NFL is basically allowing this to happen because of their
Paul, honestly, you see.
Let me understand what you're saying.
Yes.
Because of their disdain for Mike Vick.
The person.
That's the person.
Yeah, it's my opinion. For the commissioner not to come out and fine the player and to criticize the official, it would have happened in any other game. It would have happened – when you look at a player, if I am James Harrison – but if I'm James Harrison, if I'm Harrison, I would have appealed on that play every fine that they gave me, and I would have brought suit against the NFL. That was a blatant late hit. It was blatant, and you know he was.
Which late hit are you referring to?
Where when he was out of bounds, he was out of bounds. This past week was to me that proves it to me that the NFL will allow these officials, and the NFL will turn the blind eye. The NFL will allow the official to rule strictly on emotion, meaning if they want to call the penalty because he's a player like any of the other on the active roster, not to mention the guy is having he's having an MVP year. I think the league is being short-sighted.
I don't think the league is perfectly allowing these things to go. I think it's a situation where the guy is – they're not really viewing the officials. They're not really viewing this guy as a quarterback. They're viewing him as a runner, running back in a lot of ways.
Paul, he was out of bounds.
So he's not
– Paul, that,
so he's not, I, I'm not disagreeing with you. I think it should have been called. But my point is I don't think it's something that came down – an edict that came down from the league that says
I didn't say it was an edict. I said I think quietly it's unspoken. Meaning, I thought unspoken. If the officials don't call the penalty,
an unspoken edict by the league that basically says that it's okay to hit Michael Vick because of he's Michael Vick. I mean he killed dogs, he fought dogs, and all this other crap. Is that essentially what you're saying? And what you're saying, if that's what you're saying, I mean, I think you're crazy. I think you're crazy if you're saying that, because in a lot of ways, I mean, if you look at it, this past weekend's game was one of the was the highest rated game in Sunday Night Football history. So people want to see Michael Vick, and if it's making ratings, and that's making dollars, and if that's making dollars, then that's making sense. So what I'm basically saying is Michael Vick in a lot of ways is returning to that cash cow form that he had coming out of Virginia Tech and that he had during his heyday in Atlanta. Michael Vick is turning back into that guy. And don't be surprised to see this guy endorsed in some sneakers. Don't be surprised if you have this guy endorsing some shoes again. Don't be surprised if you have this guy endorsing products.
Yeah, but you know what? It's going to – you and I both know that's certainly going to happen. But for you to sit here and say that it certainly is dollars and cents, but if that was a running back, if that was a wide receiver of his caliber, if that was an all-star running back, an all-star wide receiver, any of the quarterbacks in the NFL, that's drawing a flag. But the fact –
I can't sit here and say it's because he's Michael Vick and that whole situation with the dogs and things of that nature. That's the reason. I mean, if that's what you're going with, it doesn't make sense because it's contrary to what makes dollars and cents. So if it's contrary to what makes dollars and cents, then it doesn't make sense at all.
Paul, it's not about...
It's contrary to what makes sense.
It's not about dollars and cents. It is absolutely positively not about dollars and cents. It's strictly one thing. It's strictly about for the NFL, they have recognized that, you know, the bottom line is on this guy. I think they allow him to come back in the league. They're going to allow him to play. But I think there's a lot more people that do not believe that Michael Vick, the person, should be – and should be allowed the, you know, the quote-unquote luxury of coming back and having it flow this way. I think a lot of people said, well, if he comes back, and if he comes back into the league and he has an okay career, whatever. But the fact is, he comes back in under 2 years, he is beyond, he's improved his status in terms of the his ability on the field. And I think that the officials, it's very clear that the four officials that were out there, the six officials that were out there last week didn't very much appreciate Michael Vick, the athlete. They wouldn't mind have seen Michael Vick, the athlete, suffer potentially, you know, a season-ending or career-ending injury on that.
I don't know where you're going. I don't know where this came from, but this seems to be coming out of left field.
I'm critical of Vic, the player, but I can't stay another minute and say, and of course, in a couple minutes.
But you're essentially saying this is a big time conspiracy.
No, I didn't say it's a conspiracy. I didn't say no. I did not. No, I said it's all unspoken. No, Paul. No, you put it in words.
You're saying this is an unspoken conspiracy.
No, it's not a conspiracy. I just think that very clearly
everybody's conspiring.
A conspiracy would say,
that's
Paul, that they are, let me finish and I'll tell you what I'm saying. But your problem is you're too impulsive and you're not willing to learn and you can't grow as a person if you're not willing to learn. No one is going to the players and telling the players, hurt Michael Vick. That's a conspiracy.
I'm not talking about the players. The referees are saying,
you know what, this is a violent game, the way it used to be played, without the anomaly year of 2010, the NFL used to be a violent sport. The referees are saying, you know what, when it comes to this guy, we're going to let the old rule stand. If he takes a hard hit, if he takes a late hit, and we absolutely positively can turn the other eye. If there's a way to, that was a, you know, when you broke it down in slow-mo, it's blatant. But at live game speed, they're not going to catch it. Let's move on. And that's what they do. They let him take late hit after late hit after late hit, you know, and of course, all during the game, all years, every commentator in the last 3 weeks since Andy Reid has made it, you know, Andy Reid's trying to protect his player. And now that the cameras are watching it, it's blatant. He's taken 4-5 blatant late hits a game.
Okay, I think the officials do need to do a better job of protecting this guy. He has taken an inordinate amount of hits. An unnecessary type of hit.
There's a lot of people in the media who do not like Michael Vick. It's very clear. They don't cover it.
But it's true.
You worked at ESPN long enough to know they control the media. If they want to make a story a story, they are not covering this story for a reason. Because nobody wants Michael Vick, the person.
People are talking about this. I don't think it comes down. I think it's a situation where a lot of times with guys like him, they're treating him like he's a running back because of his style. Now, I think it's more of a style situation more so than we don't like you, Michael Vick situation.
Not in the year where player safety hasn't just taken a forefront. It has totally dominated the league.
But what you're saying is an unspoken conspiracy by everybody to get this guy hurt because of the late hits and all, because they're not calling
him. No, Paul, I didn't say getting him hurt. I don't think they mind Michael Vick getting roughed up a little bit.
Okay, and I'll tell you this. Obviously, if you're going to get roughed up, ultimately you're going to get hurt. Now, I'll tell you this. That is contrary to what makes sense financially. That's contrary to dollars and cents. You're a money guy. That's contrary to that because, like I said before, last weekend, Cowboys, Eagles game, you're talking about a Cowboys team that has no shot at the playoffs. A team that everybody loves, but a team that has no shot at the playoffs. The last weekend's Cowboys, Eagles game, if you look at that last weekend's game, highest rated Sunday night football game ever since it's been on NBC. Ever. So that is not because of John Kitna. That is not because of Tashard Choice. That is not because of Jason Peters. That is because of Michael Vick, the one and only Michael Vick, the one and only DeSean Jackson, those guys. That's because, that is why, because Michael Vick is exciting. He is exciting. He plays an exciting brand of football that everybody loves to watch week in and week out. So if you're the NFL, and do you want to see this guy, a guy who is bringing viewers, eyes and ears to your sport, do you want that guy hurt? I would say no. That is contrary to what I believe makes financial sense for the league, and that is contrary to what makes dollars and cents. So, like I said before, it doesn't make dollars, it doesn't make sense. So, if it makes dollars, it makes a whole lot of sense. And that's why you have an 18-game schedule probably that's going to happen, and that's why you have all these things that happen in this league, because it's all about the money. That's why you have flex scheduling, where they'll move a game from 8 o'clock.
But why wouldn't they then, why won't the NFL then recognize that they're taking a huge risk in allowing this guy, who is a quarterback, who is not a running back, to continue to take these late hits? How come the NFL hasn't come in and said, you know what, we cannot, this can't be allowed anymore? Where's your logic? Paul, let me talk for a minute. You're dominating the airwaves. Let me talk. Where's the NFL's logic, if he's a big-ticket item, to let a quarterback who's not a running back, I'm sure Roger Goodell knows what position he plays. I'm sure these officials know he is not a running back. He's a quarterback. Where is the logic in letting him get injured?
There is no logic in letting him get injured. That's why Andy Reid has been complaining to the league about it and making the league aware of what is going on. So by him doing that, hopefully that gives more eyes and ears to the situation. And Michael Vick did get a roughing the passer call against him in that particular football game. So, I mean, they're watching on some level, and hopefully they will continue to watch. But I just don't think there was concerted effort by the league to let this happen, an unspoken concerted effort by the league to make this happen. And I don't think that was the case, and I don't agree with you on that. I think you're actually wrong, dead wrong on that situation, on that particular situation. But I just think right now, again, it's a situation where they're just viewing the guy as a runner instead of as a quarterback. And it's going to take time, I believe, but I think ultimately they'll start making the calls, and ultimately he will get the protection that he deserves and that is necessary for a quarterback and the protection that they give quarterbacks in the NFL. And he may not get the same type of protection as a Tom Brady, as a Peyton Manning and those guys, but ultimately he will get the protection. And let's take a call while we're talking about the situation. Hello, you're on Go For It.
Hello, this is Mark calling from New Jersey. Listen to you guys talk. I think both of y'all made good points, but I just think certain quarterbacks get them calls, like Tom Brady, Peyton Manning. They get them calls all the time. Like when the Colts played the Eagles, the guy swiped Peyton Manning's back and got a call, roughing the passer. Just, I don't think Michael Vick is one of the quarterbacks that's going to get them calls yet.
But I'm going to say this. The old Michael, you don't think the old Michael Vick, who doesn't get these charges, isn't in the news, continues to project to be the same player the old Michael Vick wasn't. He was getting those calls before these issues. If somebody would hit Michael Vick like that, he was getting that call before he kills dogs and takes out their teeth. Now you have an official who has a dog and a young kid and says, you know what, this is my chance to pay this guy back.
But before Mark answers, let me say something. Different time, different era. You're talking about a guy who played back in his last year with the Falcons, I believe it was 2006. We're talking now 2010, where we have now increased awareness about concussions, where we have that situation now. And now with all that in the mix, the league is now doing the game is a lot different in terms of the physicality of it. And they're protecting any shots to the head. They're protecting defensive wide receivers, and they've always protected the quarterback, and they're going to protect it even more so now. So I think it's a different time, and I don't think that's a fair comparison.
That penalty, that one call they missed on Michael Vick was going out of bounds, and he took a shot. Like, If that was Peyton Manning, Tom Brady, any other quarterback, I think that would have been a 15-yard penalty right there.
I'm gonna tell you, Paul, if that was Coy Detmer, he's getting a 15-yard penalty. I agree with you, but I
have a problem with you saying it's because he killed dogs and took their teeth out of their mouths.
It's clear, Paul. People don't like this guy anymore. It's very clear.
Yeah, but that has nothing to do with what is going on on the football field. That is irrelevant. It's not really relevant to this whole situation.
Paul, I think you're really it's sad to see you don't recognize that it's very relevant, because the bottom line is, again, if people don't like the person, it will play a role in how they deal with them.
It's irrelevant. It's irrelevant.
I have a question for you, Paul. How do you feel about your Super Bowl pick, the Cincinnati Bengals?
Well, I mean, we all are entitled to mistakes in life, and sometimes we review a situation and see a situation that is not necessarily there. And obviously, it wasn't there with Cincinnati, and that's a team at 2-11 has been a major, major disappointment. But, I can't really defend the pick.
Who was your NFC pick?
I had the Green Bay Packers, actually. And it looks like at this point, me being the Eagles fan, I kind of hope that my prediction does not work out very well with the Green Bay Packers. I guess we're all entitled to some bad picks. But I did say that the New England Patriots will win the AFC East, if that means anything to anybody.
Not to me.
And we both did say that Brett Favre would take a big step back and the Vikings would take a step back, if that means anything to anybody either.
I do remember you saying that. Well, thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling. I knew ultimately I couldn't escape from that. It was just a bad pick. There's really no getting around it. It was just a bad pick. I guess we're all entitled to mistakes, right?
Well, sure.
And so I made a big mistake there. And TL, speaking of that, TL actually came out and said that the whole situation with the Cincinnati Bengals was the coach's fault. It was the front office, and he said it was also the players. But one player that I do think has to take a big role and a big responsibility for that whole situation is Carson Palmer. I mean, he really, really he just gave the ball to the other team way too much. And when he gave the ball to them, they were returning it for touchdowns. So Carson Palmer has not had a great year at all for the Cincinnati Bengals. An awful year, actually. Threw for 21 touchdowns, but also threw for 18 interceptions. So not a great year for Carson Palmer. And so he is a big reason why this Bengals team is where they are right now. Defensively, they're not good. And Carson Palmer has been bad. And ultimately, you put it all together and you have a 2-11 season. But if you're Terrell Owens, you've been ran out of many situations. You barely got an opportunity this time with Cincinnati. Why are you talking? Someone needs to tell this, get this guy's ear. I know you like to tell the truth. Your mom and your grandmother always told you to tell the truth. But my goodness, don't you like making money in the NFL? Don't you like playing in this league? Why would you open your mouth again? You're a guy that you can't open your mouth. You've opened your mouth everywhere you went. And you would think with age you would understand that, but, I mean, I guess it's hard to teach an old dog new tricks. And right now, with Terrell Owens, he keeps doing the same old tricks year in and year out and opening his mouth and ultimately putting his foot in his mouth. And then that's not a good deal and not a good situation. But we're now being joined by 11-time Pro Bowler, offensive tackle, Willie Rowe. Willie, how are you, sir?
Good. And just to keep coming, I talked to my cousin earlier today, and I said the same thing. I mean, the thing is, I mean, it's one thing when you call out players, and then you go every team, and you start talking about your teammates, every the quarterbacks. But when you start calling out coaching staffs and stuff like that, I mean, you will get blackballed around the NFL, you know. And you know, then he was talking about he wouldn't be paying for free this year. I just think T.O.'s got to be smarter than that. And you know, T.O. should have been in the top 100 list on that NFL channel as far as, you know, along with some other guys. You know, I feel like Junior Seau wasn't on the list, and I don't know, Shannon Sharp, they say he was a tweener or whatever the case may be. But he should have been on that list. But, I mean, you know, T.O. has been such an outstanding football player, and for what he's accomplished in the league, especially going to different teams, you would think he might be a possible first ballot Hall of Famer, but it won't happen just because of the personality and everything that came along with him.
Yeah. I mean, Paul said it best, and I think, Willie, you hit the nail right on the head. I feel genuinely bad for him as an athlete, because he is one of the greatest wide receivers to get a chance to step on the field, and it's every year. You know, last year with the Bills, by his just insatiable need to dominate, and which was being quiet, he gets, you know, a bad rap, finally gets on a very talented Bengals team, which just they couldn't get it right this year, and it's obviously frustrating. But he's having a great year, and to do this at the wrong time when they're now irrelevant, but he's going to dominate the headlines, walk into the offseason. Everything he does on the field this year is wiped away by what he says off the field.
Well, I think he signed a two-year deal. I think he signed a two-year deal. Maybe he's trying to get him to release him. I mean, I don't know if it's
second year, Paul. You know, Paul's the man. He knows all. But I thought the second year was so backloaded. It was so backloaded that they're never going to keep him. It was It's basically a 1 year deal the way it was written. He knows he's getting cut.
Paul, I thought it was 2 year for me.
I believe it was a 2 year deal. I'm thinking it was.
I don't know if it was 2 year for me. I don't know what the country. Well, you know, let's go. Go ahead, Paul.
It was a 2 year deal.
It was a 2 year deal. Okay, let's go back. All this started with T.O. when he went to when he was in San Francisco and doing his little stuff, everything was cool. Everything turned for T.O. when he decided to go touch on the star, and they had that big controversy in Dallas. That's when he turned from T.O. You know, it was fun and games to T.O. the villain. You know, when he decided to go do all those shenanigans in Dallas, that's when, you know, soon after that he started having problems with the 49ers, and then everywhere after that it's been, you know, another version of T.O. You know what I mean? It was, you know, but you know, off the field, if the Pro Bowl, T.O. doesn't drink, he doesn't smoke, he might drink a little wine, but T.O.'s a good person. I mean, I played at the Pro Bowl several times with him. I mean, not loud, you know, quiet at the hotel. You see him out in L.A., he's just out hanging out. I mean, T.O.'s not a bad guy. He's a good guy. I mean, it's just, you know, it's just like some people, they step into a whole other person, you know, when it comes to what they do in their livelihood. I don't understand it.
And at this point, you seem like he's got 37 years old. Will he ever learn?
I don't know. I mean, it looks like he won't. For nine of them, I mean, one of the best athletes to ever play that position, you know, I mean, as far as taking care of his body and the way he prepared and in phenomenal shape, you know, just like, look at the receiver at Bryant, you know, that's my ageist guy, but the guy never really had a bad knee and took the money and ran. T.O. is always, you can't ever say anything about T.O. wasn't coming ready to play. I mean, he came ready to play. You know, I mean, look what he did in the Super Bowl for Philly. Look what he did for y'all when the guy broke his foot or whatever, and he leg and comes back and have
right.
One of the best performances of a receiver in the Super Bowl game, playing on one and a half legs. I mean, the guy was unbelievable.
You're right. When you say that, though, the problem is, and you're hitting into a deeper point, which is how many people remember T.O., the great athlete, versus T.O. the loudmouth, or Mio, as you know, in Philadelphia, he was used to be referred to as Mio, and that's the sad part about him is you really do forget that, you know, he is in the 30, 35, 537. He's had this is a phenomenal year for a 37-year-old wide receiver. He is running, catching, hitting, blocking, everything.
And like you said, my last year I was 35. So and I'm talking about guys that are played a lot. And T.O., when he came to the league, 96. I mean, it's not a guy we're talking about that came into the league and was sitting on the bench. I mean, the guy came in playing from the day one, from a smaller school and establishing himself. So he was already. And remember I'm looking at it from a football perspective. Remember when Jerry Rice's last year, and Jerry Rice might be the last game, and T.O. goes out there and gets 20 receptions in one game or whatever.
Right.
And I know Brandon Marshall broke that record last year, the year before. But I mean, the guy's done some great things. And like I said, if it wasn't for all the other stuff, antics off the field and the talking, I mean, to me, the guy should be a first ballot Hall of Famer. But like I said, it won't happen. And hopefully, if he wants to play next year, he can play. But like you said, it's going to be overshadowed by what happened off the field. But we can't say this, though. T.O.'s never been involved in any type of controversy, DUIs or, getting in trouble. I mean, but it's, so really what has he done off the field? If we want to look at the modern athlete that's getting in trouble or domestic violence or, getting in trouble with the law, T.O.'s not that guy. It's just what he does internally with the football franchise.
And you're right, and unfortunately, like you said, and like Jeremy says, it's his mouth that tends to get the guy in a lot of trouble. Now, Willie, this past week, Brett Favre, the streak ended, 297 straight games, and ended against the Giants. He didn't play. He had the shoulder injury. And in your mind, Willie, was it just his time? It wasn't just time for him to sit it out.
I mean, obviously, when you look at the guy, you see the guy over there, and his hand is purple, and he has numbness in his hands. I mean, he can't play. What did he say? A golf ball mask behind his shoulder, in between his shoulder. I mean, the guy couldn't play. So yes, it's time. And I mean, you think about it. After really, this started last year, that Saints game. I mean, he got beat bad in that Saints game. Bad enough for him not to want to come back this year, talking about his foot was still bothering him this year. I mean, he took some hits last year, but in that NFC Championship game, remember it was like a boxer getting knocked down and kept coming off the pavement. And by the way, guys, I don't know if y'all saw that Khan fight on HBO, but that was great last weekend.
Oh.
That was an outstanding fight. And but anyway, he looked like a guy that got knocked down a few times and got back up and got knocked down. So I don't think Brett was right going into – looking back on it now, I think Brett was hurting this offseason. And, they sweetened the pot for him on the contract, and they made it, almost too hard to turn down to come back. And then, you go out there and the defense has had an atrocious year. Jared Allen – I mean, I don't know if he's been on the football field this year. Kevin Williams, these guys haven't. A lot of those guys didn't show up, and I guess the legs got ran out of them last year.
Right. And the Vikings are definitely struggling. They looked horrible Monday night. And, well, in talking about that streak, being a quarterback like Brett Favre was, talk about how amazing it is to play 297 straight games.
I can't even put that in perspective. I played 13 years and I played about 190 games, and for a guy to play almost 300 games, and we're not even talking about playoffs, we're talking about just regular season games.
Right.
I mean, just getting out there on your body and standing on there and running around that turf every week, taking those hits. I mean, a lot of that had to do with he just great genetics, and a lot of that he was just very lucky. I mean, he probably had some days felt horrible and still went out there and suited up.
Now, you're going to get mad when I say this, Willie, but and I like Brett Favre, the athlete, but sometimes I think people forget, though, it was also easier for him because, and you had to sit out some games because you didn't decide to become a pain-killing addict. And I always go back to, like, is it fair for, when you're Barry Bonds to be chastised the way he is because he takes steroids to hit home runs, but this guy, plays 300 straight games and the playoffs and the Super Bowls, and then but he was addicted to it was very well known but very easily forgotten that he was addicted to painkillers for many years. So, and he was abusing the system, and so where you didn't want, and many players had to sit out because they weren't going to do that. Here's a guy that's, you know, we're praising, but clearly, I mean, again, should we be praising the fact that he admits to having addiction to painkillers, you know, abused them, and it did allow him, you know, to play when he shouldn't have been, when you or any other player wouldn't have been playing?
Well, I have to agree but kind of not agree with you in that sense where, I mean, outside of the painkillers, I mean, guys, we pop Indocin all week, anti-inflammatory. Like, let's say at the end of my career on the given week, I'm getting massages twice a week. I'm going to the chiropractor every week, and then we're going. I wouldn't want to start the anti-inflammatories early in the week. So Wednesday practice, I might be hurting some, and I might take some Tylenol. The trainer might give it to me on the field because I gauge and see how my body feels. Well, Wednesday night, Thursday night, Friday, I'm taking the Celebrex, the Indocin, or whatever you're going to take. And then on Sunday, to be honest with you, on game day, you flex all your knees up and your back up, and we line up. The vets line up every week, man, taking Toradol shots. You can take B12 or Toradol. You know, some teams didn't do it. But the special teams guys would take the B12 and get them hyped. But I'm telling you, man, you take that Toradol shot, and you're not really feeling nothing unless it's major till that Tuesday. But when that shot wears off that Monday or Tuesday, you might feel some nicks and some bruises like, dang, I don't even remember getting hit over there. But that Toradol works. That's a strong, strong Advil.
Let me ask you something about the Toradol, Willie, because I mean this. I know much about the Toradol. You're saying that was that widely used when you were playing in the NFL, that it was very widely accepted that you're going to basically go in on a Saturday or on a Friday or right before the game, and you're taking those shots of that Toradol, and it's gone. You know, it was basically known that's what you're going to do to alleviate the pain.
Well, no, the doctors give us, we take the Toradol. We would line up and take the Toradol. Well, you know, if guys were nicked up and banged up, then they took the Toradol. But not during the week. You just take it on game day. Okay?
You just take it pre-game. It lasts about what? It lasts about 12, 24. It's in your system 12, 24 hours. So you're taking
But you really feel effects for about. That's why you don't want to take it before pregame. You take it out the pregame warm up before you've been to go play the game, and it lasts about 3 hours. You know, it lasts about three good. You know, it lasts long enough to. But you feel it, the effects of it for about a day. Yeah, you feel it.
Wow.
To be honest with you, I really can't sit there and talk about Brett because, I'm an honest guy. I mean, I took Toradol pretty much the end of my career. You know, I was taking Toradol shots, and I know Steelers, a lot of guys took Toradol shots on top of whatever else some guys are doing. But, I mean, put it like this. If you get shot with that needle on that side every week, you flip side to side. You don't even want to get shot in the same side every week because you feel it. So you go side to side each week taking those Toradol shots, man. And I remember my last Pro Bowl I played in, I didn't have any Toradol on me. But Lincoln Kennedy, some guys told me, some linemen, they take painkillers and stuff to make it through practice, man. They take strong. They took the strong Vicodins to make it through practice. Well, I never did that to make it through practice. I would take the anti-inflammatory. But Lincoln was taking Toradol and all this stuff just to practice. And I knew I was at the Pro Bowl and I wasn't going to be able to get a shot at the Pro Bowl. So Lincoln had some Toradol pills. So he gave me the Toradol pills and he took his Vicodin or whatever he had over there with him, stashed with him for the game. And I took the Toradol pills and went out there and played in the Pro Bowl.
Wow.
Now, Willie, and looking back at all the pills, all the things that you guys have taken, are you a little afraid of the long-term effect?
You know, yeah, I'm afraid of it, but like I said, I mean, this is my thing. Yeah, and my thing was this. I had a my thing. I wasn't a Roy guy. I wasn't really an upper guy. That wasn't my thing. I took my Toradol and I took my anti-inflammatories, and I was a drinker. You know, I drank a little bit and I smoked. And a lot of my career, man, because at first I smoked black and mild. So after the game, I smoke with the guys. That's whenever I was drinking, I smoke a pack, and I might smoke two or three during the week. By Thursday, I wouldn't smoke anymore. We run, but I would only buy like two singles. And by Thursday, Friday, I wouldn't do it, but, you know, and then play game day. But I do that routine. So my last few years were really most of my career, I was smoking them stupid cigarettes. So, you know, we have our vices, man. I mean, it's a lot of pressure. It's a tough living. You make very good money, you know, and, but I mean, everybody has their vices and things they do. And I'm going to tell you what, man, Brett, you don't know this. Brett Favre's been getting shots the last couple of years in his knee, his ankles. You know, he's been getting cortisone shots. He's been doing all kind of stuff.
Yeah, you know, I mean, that, and I thank you for, you're 1,000% right. Believe me when I tell you, I think for any athlete, and you hit the nail right on the head, you said we all have our vices. I think for the fact that a guy like Brett Favre, and again, a guy like Barry Bonds, these athletes were so obsessed about creating their legacy. They're putting their life on the line. I mean, you had said you weren't going to go to the end of doing the steroids and doing the drugs that can get really long term side effects. But some of these athletes do. They take this stuff potentially life threatening serious.
And you got to understand it like this. You got just like me. I didn't want to get out. I had played at such a high level, and at 35, you know, I was hurt in the preseason, and I told them to sit me down, and they wouldn't let us sit down. We had Vermeer, we worked hard. We practiced probably one of the hardest practice teams in the league. So you know, I was hurting before the season started. I was hurting that last year. Then I tear my hamstring and came back. Then I had a staph infection. Like before, I had a 3 o'clock. We had a 3 o'clock game against Denver late in the year. So I have a Saturday night. I'm shaking and shivering. I don't know what's wrong. They send the doctor over. See, the stuff people don't know about. Then I have a staph infection in my leg a little bit, and then I take whatever I got to take, and your groin, you know, your glands swell up down by your groin. Well, the next day I walk in there, and I'm feeling kind of bad, you know, and then they give you that Toradol shot, and you go out there, and you push yourself to play. I mean, we force ourselves to do stuff that we normal people just wouldn't do, and then, you know, at the end of the season, basically what happens especially when you get older, your body pays a price for taking all those shots and taking the anti-inflammatory, and then at the end of the season, you go cold turkey, boom, and you're not taking all that stuff, and your body has to adjust to not taking it, and that's when you feel bad. You feel real bad because you know to get through it, you've been forcing yourself to take stuff and do stuff. So what's going to happen with Brett, he's been pushing and pushing and pushing his body, and in a few years, and I think this year was really the year that hurt him, I think he's going to be feeling it, and I feel it, but I try to maintain the cardio and working out. But I mean, yeah, we sell out and give our body, and you know, I don't agree with the steroid things, but you got to look at Barry Bonds and Mark McGwire. These guys' knees are starting to go on them. Well, they know they can take this thing and make them feel good, make them feel like their joints are feeling better when it's really not, and they get to play at that level they've been playing at. See, and they sacrifice, and they're making $20 million plus on top of that. So they sacrifice their body and sacrifice to take this drug because they still want to be an elite player. And they know without that drug, they weren't going to be an elite player. And to be honest with you guys, if it wasn't for the Toradol, and, you know, I did the massages and getting the rest and stuff, but if it wasn't for the Toradol, I don't know, man. I don't know how good I would have felt out there on that field every week.
And it sounds like it's just the culture of the NFL.
It is. They're going to do what they got to do to have you out on that field on Sunday.
Right, and you got to make them. You got to do what you got to do to stay on the roster and ultimately make money.
It makes money, and they want you playing good out there because it makes them money. You know, and so, you know, just like remember Jerome Bettis was on TV Odyssey, and me and JB go way back, but he couldn't barely get out of bed and was moving around every week. Well, he's taking anti-inflammatories and going over there, and I'm pretty sure if I talk to JB, I know on game day, you know, you can't see they know what they're doing. They're not going to give you the Toradol all week now. You can't, unless you got some pills or so, a doctor, you know, you can't just go get Toradol. I mean, you can't take that, but on game day. But you can take the indocin and anti-inflammatories during the week. You can do that.
Now, Willie, it's a big showdown in the NFC East at the Meadowlands. Giants, Eagles. Essentially, both teams are 9-4. If you look at their schedules, more than likely the winner of this game will probably win the NFC East. How do you see this one playing out?
And I had to say that I was totally wrong about the Jets, and I mean the play calling and giving them the quarterback to play at the last minute, you know, you don't know what's happened with the Jets' offense. It just disappeared. But the game in the Meadowlands is going to be a tough game because the Giants are running the ball very well. But they did lose some more receivers. If I'm the Eagles, I'm going in there and slow down that running attack because Eli Manning hasn't been playing great as late, and I'm gonna make them throw the ball. So I mean, I gotta say, to me, I think the Eagles have the advantage if they can slow down the running game of the Giants. I think I like the Eagles if they can slow them down. Because when they couldn't throw the ball was go out there and run the ball on the team on Minnesota last week.
On the Vikings last week. You look at Eli Manning, 19 interceptions. So you're right. If they can get Eli Manning to throw the football and stop the running game, which they did last time, and then Eli Manning turned it over last time against the Eagles, if they can do that, I agree with you. They will be very, very successful. And speaking of the New York Jets, I mean, last time we talked to Willie, Jeremy, and yourself, we're counting the Jets, talking about how the Jets will go into Foxborough and get it done against the New England Patriots. 45 points later, the Patriots won, and the Jets, again, they found a way. They lost again this week against the Miami Dolphins at home. Sanchez is struggling. If you look at the Jets right now, what's going on there?
I'm glad, just like the year we started 9-0, I just think the Jets were rolling on all cylinders and everything was clicking and the team was confident. One reason I think they've been hurting is because Damon Wood has been playing with a bad knee. I think he's out for the year. So I think them rolling guys in and out of the lineup, and now they got to get some continuity with this line all over again, it's been a problem. And I think especially the biggest thing dealing with the Patriots is the Jets were geared to match up with Randy Moss and Braylon Edwards and big receivers because they have these big corners. Well, now we got these little bitty scat receivers, Wesley, and you got Branch, you got these little guys, and you got little Woodhead. Well, these are little scat guys, you know. These are little quick in and out the break guys. And I don't think these teams are gearing up to play these little guys because these guys are so quick and so elusive. And then you got the tight end. You bring in Crumpler and some veteran tight ends playing. And I mean, they're just playing some excellent football right now. And we didn't know Tom Brady was going to turn into Super Brady the last couple of weeks and just take over the league right now.
And right now, he's definitely an MVP candidate. And I guess if the season ended today, you would have to almost say that Tom Brady is the MVP of the NFL.
You agree with that, Jeremy?
No, I mean, Paul's going to get. I hate to say it because I'm probably going to get on me. It's such a fraudulent year. I mean, Michael Vick, you know, if he projects the way he is going to project, should get the nod only because who would have thought a guy like Michael Vick coming off of – he had a horrible 4 or 5 games with the Eagles last year
You're talking the nod – over a guy who had 29 touchdowns with only 4 interceptions at this point in the season.
And Jeremy, look who his number one receiver is, Welker.
I can't.
Now he's got Branch. Deion Branch didn't done anything in Seattle in 3 years.
I like Tom Brady a lot, but I cannot tell you how disgusted I am that they are. It's unexplainable how they're winning games the way they're winning. They have no offense.
The thing is this: 29 interceptions on 29 touchdowns on 4 interceptions, and this guy has done it. He's been doing it throughout his career without all these great weapons.
Without the great weapons, he's doing it without the great weapons. And not a great
weapons of the world.
And does he have? And does he? And he doesn't have a great running game, does he? He's got a lot of money.
It's it right, said to me. I don't get how these defenses do, they have to start recognizing you cannot play a zone with a quarterback like Brady. He will pick you apart all day. When you sit back and you don't and you sit in those zones, those receivers are told they, if they're seeing zone, run that out 2 yards short and just stop, and we will just chop this field in 10-yard increments. And that's what they have done all season long. They have made it a 10-yard field.
Well, I will say this. I feel like New England is playing great. The catalyst is Tom Brady. If Tom Brady's not quarterbacking that team and is accurate, he's throwing the ball so accurate right now where the guys are catching and running. If you don't have Tom Brady engineering that, and then you got the defense over there watching him, and everybody talked about this defense, how it was young and these guys weren't playing. These guys have picked it up the last couple weeks. And all I'm saying right now, Jeremy, these guys are hot. And they're playing great. I mean, Tom Brady doesn't have Macklin and Deshaun Jackson to throw to. I mean, he doesn't have these guys that can fly. I mean, but the way they spread the ball, what they do is they spread the ball around so well. Who you gonna cover? Because it's not one guy that beats you, and that's why I think it's better without Randy Moss because you can't double anybody. I mean, you really don't double anybody on that team anymore.
And we gotta leave it there, Willie. We want to thank you for stopping by, sir. It was greatly appreciated. We couldn't get into all the topics, but we got to some, and we definitely had a good time here today, Willie. And like always, we got to bring you back, and we're going to talk some more football.
Thank you very much, man. Yeah, thanks very much, man. It's great to talk to you guys, man. And it's been an outstanding year. We'll just have to see how it plays off. But,
hey, light one up for us, Will.
I can't smoke those black and mild like I used to, man. I had to go down on that, man. All right, man.
We want to thank Willie Rowe for stopping by. We want to thank everybody who called, everybody who listened. Again, you can listen to this show and other shows at blogtalkradio.com. That's blogtalkradio.com/TN, where you listen to the show and other shows. And make sure you join us Saturday at 1 o'clock. Then you can be joined by Jackie Jordan Percy and Tanner Roman from Basketball Wise, Fan 20 Basketball Wise. So make sure you listen to that show as well. See you later. Bye. For Jeremy, this is Paul Gann. See you later.